Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We are live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley and at Bulls underscore Peck. And at Locked On Bulls, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, and Google Play. Or anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. So welcome back. It's been almost a week since we've recorded. We took a little bit of a break over the holidays. Did you enjoy those games, though, on Christmas, at least, Matt, that lineup of five games that we had?
I did. It was definitely... It felt abnormal to not have a Bulls game on Christmas Day. It seemed like that had become a tradition in recent years because they're a big market team. And until this year, were a team that was at least borderline relevant enough to warrant a nationally televised game as part of the Christmas Day and Christmas night lineup. So odd to not see the Bulls playing on Christmas, but it was actually just a nice break to just enjoy some entertaining basketball games on Christmas and not be worried about what the Bulls were doing, especially this current Bulls team on the national stage. So, obviously a very entertaining back and forth game between the two finalists from last year, the two finalists from the past 3 years, Cleveland and Golden State. You had the Rockets, you had the Thunder, you had a lot of entertaining teams to be watching on Christmas Day. So I definitely enjoyed
it. I thought that Celtics and Wizards matchup was a really good game too in the middle of the day. And I was actually surprised that Golden State and Cleveland were sort of the day game. They were the noon or the 2 o'clock tip off. Figured that they would be maybe later at night, but it was a great lineup, and I'm glad that the NBA now is dominating. Seems like over the last few years, especially, that they dominate Christmas Day now. NFL kind of gets Christmas Eve, and they even get Thanksgiving. That's more of their staple, but now the NBA seems like they put their footprint on Christmas Day, and it's pretty cool. It's like it gives everybody a chance that don't normally watch a whole lot of NBA or just tuning in across from the NFL, fans that are losing their teams to playoffs or non-playoff games, you kind of get that glimpse to see what's going on around the league. Because really, you talk to anybody, they say for the average casual fan, the NBA season starts on Christmas Day.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a few years back, I guess more than a few years back, 2011, that lockout shortened season when it literally did start on Christmas Day. And that great Bulls-Lakers game was a part of that lineup where D. Rose hit that game winner. We talked about that in one of our flashbacks in last week's episode. So, but you know, it definitely kind of, it has that feeling of when you have that huge lineup of a bunch of primetime big market games on Christmas Day, that's kind of when everybody starts paying attention. Of course, you know, you still have to contend with NFL playoffs, which are right around the corner, college football playoffs. And then of course, you know, March Madness comes before the NBA playoffs do. But I think, you know, like Christmas holiday and then into early January is when people really start paying attention to what's going on in the NBA. And, you know, other than the fact that it looks like Golden State is still the team to beat, there are a lot of other really fascinating storylines going on. And, you know, when will Isaiah Thomas come back, and will he make the Cavs look like an even more legitimate contender? Is it going to be a rematch for the fourth straight year? Can any other East teams challenge? Will the Celtics challenge Cleveland? Will anybody in the West? I mean, the Rockets look amazing right now. It's going to be a pretty exciting late summer or late winter into early spring here for the NBA this
season.
Yeah,
and you get all the young players too that have kind of made the league prosper a little bit. And even the smallest sub sub-headlines or sub-plot lines seem to get more attention than you look around the other four professional sports. You look at any of those headlines and they're not grabbing as much, especially for positive things. But all right, let's dive into some Bulls news here. So there's been three games since we did our last episode. So we kind of catch up and go through a couple of these games, just the major things that we thought that happened, see any improvements, any major notable storylines from these three games. And I think I got to start this off with the blowout on the 23rd on Saturday. So with the Celtics game on Saturday, even though that the Bulls got blown out during this game, and I thought they played Cleveland really well too on Thursday night, I thought this game was a game that the Bulls grew from. But not only that, it wasn't like a blowout in the first 20 games. And I thought that was different than what they shown going on the road to a Celtics team that is in contention to be one of the best three teams in the East and try to compete to get to a finals. I thought what the Bulls showed for three quarters during that, and they kind of let it explode after that. I thought they played really well, and it was a testament to their young guys, including Chris Dunn, Lauri Markkanen, and even hot Bobby Portis and Nico Mirotic. So what was your takeaway from sort of these three games over this holiday weekend?
Yeah, well, you mentioned the blowout loss to Boston, and I kind of felt that one coming. And you mentioned it, you know, it maybe wasn't as embarrassing as some of their other blowout losses earlier this season when really it was a matter of them just giving up. You know, I think Boston is a very good team. And when the Bulls beat them earlier on in this winning streak, they were playing without Kyrie Irving. They had Irving back in that game, and Irving put up 25 points, dished out 7 assists, and was by and large very effective and a big piece of that win. You know, really the entire starting unit for Boston played well in that game. They got double digits from all five of their starters. Jaylen Brown chipped in with 20 points. So just kind of, you know, an unfortunate, you know, down night for the Bulls. They didn't shoot the ball particularly well, just 39.5% overall from the field. The loss to Cleveland was really encouraging. I mean, it was a loss that ended the winning streak. And I don't know about you, Jordan, myself, and I think probably a lot of Bulls fans out there worried about the tank going poorly, were relieved to see that winning streak finally come to an end. But, you know, the way in which the winning streak ended was really encouraging, because they were playing LeBron James-led Cavs team on the second night of a back-to-back on the road, and they were in that thing till the very end. I mean, they had a chance to tie it and send it to OT, like twice. I'm pretty sure it was Valentine, right, who missed the desperation three at the buzzer that would have sent it to OT. But I mean, talk about a team that nobody gave the Bulls, you know, a shot in that game against Cleveland, and you know they put up a heck of an effort on the road, second night of a back-to-back. I was very proud of them for that. And here they are. This is their last game in the Bradley Center before the Bucks start next season in their new stadium, and they get their second road win against the Bucks this season. And specifically for that Bucks game, the first person I want to give credit to is David Nwaba, because he played some great lockdown defense against Antetokounmpo in the fourth quarter. Giannis had 28 points in that game, but he only scored 4 in the fourth quarter, and a lot of that credit goes to Nwaba. His defense is just getting better and better.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the attention has been around Chris Dunn and his play, especially more of on a national level from people that don't focus on the Bulls every single day. Chris Dunn has been getting a lot of the attention. I think it's definitely worth it. You look at what he did against the Bucks, besides getting tossed out of the game at the end. This was another really great night. A 20 point, 12 assist, 4 steal, 2 blocks type of game from Chris Dunn. And we see this now with more confidence. And I think we've got a larger sample size since the beginning of the win streak. And you see that, and you look at what the body of work is from Chris Dunn, and people are asking, well, how is he all of a sudden developing these skills? Is it more a testament to that Tom Thibodeau doesn't know how to work his rookies? Or is he really just developing off the confidence and the opportunity to play every single night? Which one has you leaning sort of which different way? Is it more maybe this was a Thibs problem in Minnesota? Or is this just Chris Dunn finding his way finally?
Well, I mean, I think it's probably a combination of the two. We all know, you know, Bulls fans know all too well that Tom Thibodeau has never really trusted his rookies and has never entrusted big minutes to them. That's just not who he is as a head coach in the NBA. And Chris Dunn is playing significantly more minutes with the Bulls than he did as a rookie with the Wolves. So he's playing more minutes, therefore he's going to get more opportunities. But I think something that we've heard him talk about multiple times since coming to Chicago is the freedom and the confidence that he has gained, knowing that, like, hey, this is your job. You won the starting point guard job, and you take it and run with it. And if you make a mistake, I'm not going to, you know, rip you out of the game and sit you on the bench, because this is, you know, by and large, a rebuilding team, a young team. We're here to grow and learn, and you're going to make some mistakes. Fred Hoiberg is okay with those mistakes, and we're seeing an increasing trend of Chris Dunn playing better and eliminating mistakes. As a team, I think the Bulls had a season low 6 turnovers, and, you know, 4 of those actually were credited to Dunn, so it was kind of one of his poorer games as far as his ability to take care of the ball. But we're still, by and large, seeing that trend get better as far as his assist to turnover ratio. And, you know, players get better in the NBA the more opportunities they get. The more minutes they play, the more games they play, they're going to improve if they have what it takes to play at this level. And I think we're seeing more and more that Chris Dunn is a legitimate player in this league. He's still young. I know as far as rookies go, he came in older than most, but he still has his prime years ahead of him, and he's improving game by game.
Yeah, I don't think I'm ready to call him a superstar yet, or like a budding young superstar, somebody who could be capable of that. But I mean, he could be. He's shown over this course of the last, what, 4 or 5 weeks, that he can be a legitimate contributor in a starting lineup on a contending team. I mean, a guy that's putting up, trying to averaging between 18 and 20 a game, and then close to a double-double too. Like, I mean, if Chris Dunn could go between 8 and 10 assists tonight, and he's shown that over this win streak and even before that, the points, yeah, they matter, but more being able to run an offense and facilitate to some of the other guys that we were talking about. And that's what I felt where the Bulls struggled in a lot of those first 20 games, where you saw the 10-game losing streak, is at a lot of times you saw guys out there playing point or trying to run the offense that couldn't. And somehow over these 6 weeks now, Chris Dunn has found his stride, he's found his rhythm, and he's gotten increasingly better. And I don't know if that's a testament to some of these other guys playing well too and helping him, or if it's all of a sudden Chris Dunn's taking that next step that we hopefully thought he was going to when the Bulls acquired him. So a couple other guys too I want to touch on real fast. As far as Bobby and Nico go, I think this is kind of getting to the point where we can't begin to assume that neither Bobby or Nico are going to play as bad as we saw them or hope or thought we were going to get. I think we're going to get maybe not at the level that they're playing right now, but maybe a little bit under that. So where does it put the Bulls in terms of a situation where is the narrative still that we're going to trade Nico Mirotic, or do you think they shop around Bobby Portis, even though, you know, with him playing as well as he has?
I mean, to me, the more tradable piece and the piece that you should be trying to trade if you're the Bulls front office is Nico Mirotic. You picked up the rookie contract extension option on Bobby, and I think you need to see that through because he kind of fits more in line with the timeline of what the Bulls are doing. And I don't see Nico being the veteran leader on a team. He is one of the elder statesmen on this team, along with Lopez and Justin Holiday. But I don't see him playing the veteran leader role, just because what we've heard from Nico, and it's not just about the Bobby-Nico feud that seems to have very much so calmed in recent weeks, but just his personality. He doesn't strike me as a leader type. So if he is not the leader, the veteran leader you want in the locker room, he's just a guy that's a little too old to be a part of this new young core. And to me, you can't pass up this opportunity to sell high on him. I know there are a lot of Bulls fans out there right now thinking, like, this version of Nico that we're seeing now for, you know, a dozen or so games, it's like, this could be the real Nico that we've all been waiting for, and he's finally here, and now that he's finally here, we shouldn't just trade him away. I'm sorry, I still don't buy the fact that Nico can play this well all the time. I don't. And if he is not going to be this efficient and this effective all the time, and you actually can get something of value for him, even if that's a late first round, early second round pick, especially considering the Bulls have traded away second round picks for years to come, and you could certainly use one of those. Traded away this year's for $3.5 million in cash. I mean, it to me, it just makes no sense to not sell high on Nico if you...
You touched on it too. I think from a financial standpoint, in terms of what the Bulls are trying to do and talking about flexibility, we talked about it before, but it's even more prevalent now. Even throwing Bobby's name out there is maybe potentially just even taking calls on him. He's making a fraction of what Nico Mirotic is making this year and will make next year. You talked about the extension that they signed him through 2018 too. So you have him for another year. He's only 22 compared to Nico's 26. So I think at this point, it's more going to be a question of what can you get for Nico, and are the Bulls front office ready to pull the trigger on this? Is this something that they're still considering? Because like you said, the feud between Bobby and Nico seems like it's evaporated now, especially with the win streak and now just going into after the holiday, a few more games. It seems like this controversy is sort of evaporated, especially because both players are playing so well. Like, it's not one is playing better than the other, or one is playing terribly and one is playing really, really good. They're both playing well in their roles. And it's crazy to me that they're both playing as well as they are together on the floor. So that makes me wonder if the front office thinks of more of this situation in terms of long-term option than maybe continuing to stick to that thought that they would trade him after January 15th. I'm confused and sort of still don't really know, because there's a lot of factors as well. Like, Nico can veto anywhere he goes. So if the Bulls have a trade lined up that they like and he doesn't want to go there, he can veto that trade and he can stay on this roster. So I guess I'm just sort of in this state of not really sure where the Bulls take this roster. And what do I take from this win streak and a little bit after? Where do I go as a Bulls fan from here?
You know, we started this season about how we all expected, 3-20. Some people didn't think that they'd necessarily be that bad. And a lot of those games in that 10-game losing streak were winnable games. And now it's like, okay, well, 11-22, we're not the worst team in the league anymore record-wise. Should we still be trying to tank and lose? Should we keep Nico now that he looks to be the best version of himself we've ever seen, finally delivering on that draft pick that we were all sold so highly on from the front office? I mean, it's like, if you try to put yourself in the shoes of the Bulls front office right here and now, as we are a few weeks away from the January 15 deadline, not deadline, but when Nico becomes available to trade, are you second-guessing yourself a little bit? Probably. Because before Nico came back and played so well, it was, all right, well, we'll probably see if we can, generate some trade interest, and maybe we need to trade one of these two guys because they can't get along and they can't play together. Well, they're playing together exceptionally well, so maybe we don't need to trade either of them anymore. I mean, it's hard to put yourself in the shoes of the Bulls front office because they've made so many head-scratching decisions recently.
Well, and they said so many stupid things, too, and so many things that don't coincide with each other. We talk about the hypocrisy of just some of the statements that we've even played on this show over the course of the last 2 years. You see it. You don't even know what's true or what they're holding to or what their direction is. Like, that's the ultimate thing. They say one thing, but the moves that they made in the past over like the last 5 years counterproduce Bulls fans trusting the front office and what they're saying. That's why I think there's so much speculation about, well, even though a lot of Bulls fans would like to trade Nico for value, do you think the front office would do that? Or some of the other pieces that are on the Bulls, and where are they heading in free agency? What are they going to do with this flexibility? There are a lot of questions, and I think in terms of being a Bulls fan and knowing what the front office has done before, I think it's a lot harder to be a Bulls fan right now and understand where this team could be and how quickly they could be competitive or what the timeline is even on this team.
Honestly, nothing the Bulls front office does in the next month and change would surprise me. If they keep everybody, if they don't trade Lopez and they don't trade Nico and they keep on keeping on and wind up winning too many games than they intended to and end up picking not in the top three, but somewhere around like 10, that would not surprise me. If they did actually find a trade partner for Nico and somehow convinced him to waive his no trade clause, that wouldn't surprise me either. The point is that nothing the Bulls front office does should surprise you, because they are very unpredictable. Other than, there are some, they are, they are consistently inconsistent. Just like Nico until, the last week. The Bulls front office, anytime you think you got them pegged and you think you got them figured out, they do something that, you know, makes you say, wait, what? So, I don't know. It's going to be a very fascinating month of January and into leading up to, I think the deadline's earlier this year, right? It's like February 8th. So it's going to be a very interesting month to see just how loud, things get as far as the trade rumors surrounding certain players on this Bulls roster and whether or not something happens. I mean, I'm fascinated. I'm sitting on the edge of my seat waiting to see what they do. Personally, I would like to see them find a trade partner for Nico. And, you know, really, ideally, if they can get some value for Robin Lopez, too, they should do that, too.
Key asset and key part of that Jimmy Butler trade. You got Zach LaVine, who, you know, it seems like could return at any time here now over the next 2 or 3 weeks. I mean, we've heard Fred Hoiberg and from John Paxson now. Fred Hoiberg said that they're going to string together consecutive practices and put him on full contact and work and see how he responds to that. And then after that, could be any day. And then you had kind of John Paxson kind of pushing that timeline back a little bit. Do you think this has anything to do with the Bulls' latest win streak and their plans overall this season to try to be in the bottom half and have a good chance in the lottery? Or is this more so, all right, they don't want to rush Zach LaVine back because they don't want to get hurt, or they don't want to do something that would help, would stunt his growth in terms of his value?
I think it's more so the latter, and if, as an added bonus, the Bulls drop a few extra games before he comes back, then that's a bonus for the tank. I think first and foremost, it's about not making any unnecessary risks with a piece who is, by and large, considered the centerpiece of this rebuild. You know, everybody's excited about what we've seen from the rookie Lauri Markkanen. We're excited about Chris Dunn and the strides he's made that we're talking about. But Zach LaVine was the biggest piece of the three, a proven scorer at the NBA level who's still very young and not even in his prime. He is the most valuable piece of that trade, as we can see it right now. You do not take any unnecessary risks with that piece in a season when really it benefits you to lose more games than you win. So I think, you know, because of that, it'll, you know, they will not let him play until they are 200% certain that there are no lingering risks of allowing him to play. Because, I mean, LaVine has said he feels ready. He feels like if this were a scenario where his team was playing in the playoffs right now, he'd be out there playing. He seems very confident about his level of readiness. Obviously, you know, like, you know, conditioning is a factor there too. And, will, you know, how many minutes will he be able to play when he gets back? Probably not a full minute workload. But I think you're still going to see the Bulls be very cautious, and we might not see him until the middle of January.
Throw out the idea that John Paxson kind of wanted to walk what Fred Hoiberg had said after one of the games, just or before one of the games this weekend about Zach LaVine. He kind of wanted to walk that back a little bit. I think, you know, it makes sense from John Paxson's side. Is like, all right, if we don't have to press Zach LaVine out there right now, even though maybe he's 97% ready, if we can get him to that point where we get him 3% extra, and that takes, what, a week, 10 days, 2 weeks, maybe more time, then fine. Because right now we don't want to be in the position that we are, and that's on the uptick in terms of wins and losses. And like, you look at their schedule, they don't want to add more value out there before they can maybe unload somebody like Nico or Robin in the middle of January when they can find a trade partner. So I think all of those factors probably play into the decision to continue to let LaVine try and go with practices, see how his conditioning is. And even though he's saying he might be ready, Bulls front office is like, all right, if we can squeeze, like you had said, maybe 10, 14 more days and maybe 4, 5, 6 more losses out of this team before you return, that might not be the worst thing in the
Absolutely
world.
Absolutely not. All right, well, let's get to our mailbag segment. We've got some questions submitted from our Bulls listeners. But before we do that, Jordan, I want to tell our Locked On Bulls listeners about Draft. Fantasy sports fans, listen up. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by the pros who play it day in and day out. And it's not just me. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft and are loving it. Play in a real live NBA draft right now. You can be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the very next day. Drafts are filling every second, too, so you can join whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use the promo code LOBULLS. That's right, play in a real money draft for free just by using your promo code LOBULLS. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it that they're even offering Locked On Bulls listeners a money-back guarantee up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com right now and come play for free with promo code LOBULLS.
All right, so to kick off our mailbag segment, let's start with this question, Matt. This one comes from Mark on Twitter. He says, is the regression of players like Denzel Valentine and Cristiano Felicio more on them as individuals or the coaching staff?
That is a good question. I mean, I think, you know, depending on the player, it's, you know, it's probably, like most things, a case-by-case scenario. I've been very disappointed with Felicio this season, and you wonder if the Bulls do find a training partner for Lopez, if given more opportunities, Felicio can kind of bring himself back a bit and kind of salvage what has thus far been a lost season. I mean, he's gotten some DNP coaches decisions. The thing to me that's curious about Felicio is that we heard kind of suddenly a week or so ago, I can't remember who the report was from, but essentially that Felicio came into camp out of shape, that he didn't take good care of himself in the offseason and really hasn't gotten into his best physical shape at all this season. So to me, that's not on the coaching staff. That's on the individual, right? That's the player's responsibility to stay in shape in the offseason and come to training camp ready to play. And if after signing a 4-year, $32 million extension, Felicio thought, all right, well, I earned my first big NBA contract. I can take a load off. You know, shame on him. As for Valentine, I think this season, you know, his rookie season was a lost year. It's really unfortunate that he suffered that ankle injury in preseason and kind of got buried in the rotation. And then when when the opportunity rarely presented itself for Valentine to play last year, he was just kind of a square peg in a round hole, and the Bulls were trying to balance Butler and Rondo and Wade and all these pieces. None of it made any sense. So I think Valentine's, you know, I wouldn't necessarily even use the word regression with Valentine. I think we've seen more from him this season than we saw last season, and hopefully he'll continue to find whatever it is that his role is supposed to be on this roster. And that is absolutely not just his responsibility, but Coach Hoiberg's responsibility.
Yeah, I think that's funny about Denzel Valentine. You said that wouldn't really call it a regression. I wouldn't either, because if you think about where the Bulls drafted him and the type of player he was coming out of college, you knew that he wasn't going to be able to compete in terms of athleticism with some of the other guys. He doesn't stack up as like that elite type of athleticism or anything. You weren't getting that from Denzel Valentine. You were hoping that he could shoot the ball, he could score, he could help facilitate and bring his basketball IQ. And that's part of the reason why they drafted him. And that's part of the reason why he was successful at Michigan State. So I think it really depends on what your standards were for him coming in. And like you had said, his rookie year was really kind of a lost year. And we didn't really get to see him completely flow into a team that was trying to compete, sort of hanging around in purgatory. But yeah, I think his time not being able to consistently grab minutes or be in a rotation in Fred Hoiberg's system last year kind of hurt him this year. But in terms of regression, I wouldn't say I had terribly high hopes for Denzel Valentine. I wasn't thinking that he was ever going to be a starter on this team. But I hope that by the end of the year, maybe we could see possibly some consistency in terms of him being a part of this rotation, being somewhere anywhere between 7 and 10 on that bench that it actually can contribute on a nightly basis. Now, for Felicio, this makes me kind of question also going back to our point about whether or not they want to trade Robin Lopez, whether they're going to move Nico or not, is the fact that you've got Felicio on your books for another 3 years at $8 million a year. And from what I've seen from him and what the Bulls have saw from him, he doesn't get any playing time. He looks like you said, terrible shape, and he doesn't look like any of the player that he was. He looks like a ghost. So now my biggest question is, a lot of his success came with Dwayne Wade. We talked with multiple people about this and sort of why Cristiano Felicio has played as bad as he has this year. He said that he played really well with Dwayne Wade in that sort of in that second unit, sort of third quarter, fourth quarter sort of realm where he was playing. So that makes me wonder, maybe if Zach LaVine comes back, there's some way that if he gets going with Cristiano Felicio and the way that he worked with Dwayne Wade, maybe there is something there, that maybe there is a spark. But I wouldn't bet everything that I have on Cristiano Felicio being able to step into that role should they move Robin Lopez. So that sort of scares me too with him, but I think that's mostly on him. So if you're thinking about regression in terms of the both of these guys, I think it's a mix of all of it. And like you said, most importantly, I agree with you on it's a case-by-case basis, player-by-player.
All right, our next question comes from Aaron on Twitter, and this is kind of related to Mark's question. Do you see Hoiberg as our coach of the future? What are your thoughts, Jordan?
Right now, probably not. I think in terms of future, what are we talking about? Are you talking about another extension? Then I would say definitely not. Right now, at this point, I mean, he's done some great things over the last maybe three, four weeks. And it seems like he's brought to life the confidence and the shot from Chris Dunn, which is great. But there are also some questions, too. You can't completely disregard his first 2 years as a Bulls head coach. You can't disregard the fact that him coming in, not being able to work with a superstar that has a big ego, like those all have to play factors in when you consider having to want to take that turn and maybe go out into free agency and sign a big time free agent. What are you going to do now with a coach that couldn't control his locker room before with a bunch of big egos? How is he going to be able to do that now? So I think those are some factors that you need to think about as well. I highly doubt it right now, unless there's some type of big turn next year, that Fred Hoiberg is going to be here in terms of long term. Do I want that? I don't know yet. I feel like I haven't seen enough of him in terms of what he can do and what plays to his strengths. This is really the first season that he can do that in terms of what tools he wants. So I think the jury's probably still out in terms of whether or not he could earn that contract extension. But if we're evaluating him right now, I don't think he gets it.
I would agree with you. I think it depends on your definition of coach of the future. I think he's going to stay for the entirety of this 5-year deal. You know, this is season three of a 5-year contract. They're not going to pay him to go away, especially what they've seen from him, even just this season. You know, if you want to call the first 2 years a wash because, you know, in year one, he was kind of, you know, trying to take a team on its last competitive legs with D. Rose and Joakim and Butler and them. And then year two was the three alphas experiment. You know, so say that, you know, neither of those teams' failures were Hoiberg's fault because he was thrown into a no-win situation. Fine. In year three, so far, it looks like he has done some good. You know, you mentioned the improvement of Chris Dunn's shooting. That's, you know, one example of ways I think that Hoiberg has done well working with these young kids. Do I think he is a championship caliber coach at the NBA level? No, I do not. I still think he has some serious flaws, not just, as you alluded to, the handling big egos in an NBA locker room. I think he definitely struggled with that. No debating that. I also think, as far as X's and O's, we've seen Hoiberg come up with some, you know, some clever little stuff, some clever plays to get this Bulls offense going at certain points this season. And he's flashed some new things this season that I like. But to me, game by game and quarter by quarter, he still seems to be largely outcoached by his opponents. I don't think he's a very good in-game coach. And when you're talking about this Bulls team hopefully getting back towards NBA relevance and playoff relevance, I don't trust him coming up with the right play if the Bulls are, you know, down by one or down by two, or the game is tied and there's 15 seconds to play. I don't. Maybe he'll prove me wrong over the remaining year, 2.5 years of his contract if the Bulls find themselves in those situations more and more. But right now, no. So I don't think he is that long-term coach of the future.
And I kind of want to piggyback off the question and ask you something. Do you give coaches the same type of, I guess, leniency in terms of being able to develop in the NBA? Because I feel like there has to be some type of growth. There's got to be some type of development too for coaches in that instance. So how much leverage do you give Fred Hoiberg in that he needs to also be learning along with these young guys on how to coach people, how to control a locker room in the NBA, how to do some of these daily things. And his roster's been flipped now completely from what was last year. And so if you're somebody who still thinks that Fred Hoiberg can be a great coach in the NBA and he can be the future of this Bulls team, do you allow him that leash to sort of grow and develop? And when does that sort of become like next? Because you look at it in OKC too. Billy Donovan's been getting a ton of heat for the way that OKC team has turned out and the way they started this year with three stars on that team. Do you give them the same type of leniency, the same type of leash that you do young players to develop, that you do to young coaches that are entering the league?
That's a fair and interesting question, and I think my response would be, in Hoiberg's case, you give him the leash of his 5-year contract, especially considering that the first 2 years weren't really fair to him as far as providing him with the right tools that he needed to win. And now that you're starting over, you absolutely give him the leniency of that, the remainder of that contract. I mean, if you're developing young talent and you think that that's one of Hoiberg's best skills as a coach, if he is still trying to develop his chops as an NBA coach, not just developing the young talent, but everything that goes into being a coach at the NBA level, then, yeah, the young players get a leash while they're developing, and Hoiberg gets a leash too. But again, as far as timeline, to me, that leash is, all right, it's been 5 years, so, you know, where are we at after the 2019-2020 season or whatever? You make the evaluation of how Fred Hoiberg has grown as a coach in those 5 years and make your decision based on that.
Real quick, as we wrap up this final question. So somebody else asked us about Trae Young. Chuck on Twitter asked us sort of three questions. We sort of answered this on our last mailbag last week, so we're not going to dive super in depth, but if you've caught any of the Oklahoma games since the holiday, since we talked about it last week, I know for a lot of you Chicago fans, you probably did if you were watching the Northwestern basketball game. Do you think that his draft stock has changed at all in a week? I don't really think so. I think in terms of what we had talked about last week, sort of still kind of sits at the same, although he was impressive against Northwestern. Do you think the Bulls will go after him at all in the draft should they land anywhere between 4 and 10? And would he fit the Bulls' plans in terms of rebuilding?
Okay, there's a lot there. Do I think that his draft stock has changed, you know, dramatically over the past week or so? No, I don't think so. If anything, I think it's continuing to trend up. I think, you know, Oklahoma still have a lot of tough games to play this season, and maybe he'll, you know, taper off his insane statistics that we've seen thus far. I would expect his stats to drop a little bit. I mean, if they didn't, that would be crazy. But, you know, as you said, as of right now, I kind of see him somewhere 5 to 10 because, you know, it's hard to put him above DeAndre Ayton, Marvin Bagley, Luka Doncic, and even with the injury, Michael Porter. So, like, maybe he cracks the top 5. Maybe something happens with the Porter injury where he drops. And maybe Trae Young does, in fact, you know, surpass Colin Sexton of Alabama as like the top point guard taken off the board. I think that's absolutely possible. So, it depends where the Bulls are picking. Does this tank go according to plan? Do they get lucky or lucky enough and land a top 3 pick? And then, you know, the follow-up question is, if the Bulls do land a top 3 pick, do they go best available? Or do they take this young point guard and say, wow, you know, like, we're really excited about Chris Dunn, and he grew a lot this season, but this kid looks too exciting to pass up at the point guard position. So, you know, the Bulls always tell us they go best available. Best available, always and forever, best available. I mean, they drafted for need this year because they needed a shooter. Like, okay, obviously, what they at the time deemed to be quote unquote best available as opposed to quote unquote need. So,
well, that's coming from their mouths too, not from you.
Yeah, of course. Look, I think, you know, Bulls fans should absolutely continue to watch Trae Young, or if you haven't started watching Trae Young yet, do so, because he's just an exciting college player to watch right now. If the Bulls end up accidentally winning more games than they intended to this season, and they are drafting somewhere between 5 and 10, absolutely he should be on their board.
Yeah, and I think in terms of if the Bulls are interested in if his stock is trending up and that's somebody that they would want, and for whatever reason they're between 4 and 10 and Trae Young's available there, I think if he's the best available player on the board, you take him and figure out positioning, minutes, and all of that later, and you figure out of taking the best player that's there that can help potentially change your franchise. So if he is that type of player, I don't think the Bulls really necessarily concern themselves with where they would play him. They would find a spot on the floor for him and find a way to work him in with Chris Dunn and some of these other guys. That's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. We're on Dash Radio tomorrow morning. That's 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Dash Radio, dashradio.com. In the Dash Radio app, 24/7, all basketball, all the time, no commercials on the Nothing But Net channel. We'll be back tomorrow with a brand new episode. I hope you enjoyed tonight's game, Bulls and Knicks tonight, tip off at 7 o'clock. We'll be back tomorrow to recap that and so much more on Locked On Bulls. For Jordan and Matt, have a great night. Enjoy the Bulls game.